Welcome to the PEI podcast, where we discuss all things hearing health related, from hearing aids to balance and everything in between. If you're new here, my name is Dr. Rebecca Blaha, and I've been an audiologist for the past 18 years. I'm currently an assistant professor in the Osborne College of Audiology at Salis University, and I'm the lead audiologist for the Pennsylvania Ear Institute. The Pennsylvania Ear Institute is our on-campus training facility for students that attend our Doctor of Audiology program. I specialize in all things amplification, from cochlear implants to hearing aids and bone conduction devices. And today I'm joined by my colleague, Bob Seriani.
Thanks for having me today, Rebecca. I'm Bob Seriani. I'm the chair and program director in the Department of Speech-Language Pathology here at Salis University. My background before joining Salis in 2014 was in adults in healthcare, typically treating in medical and outpatient settings. I really enjoy working with older adults, as well as adults that are compromised so that they need to be on tracheostomies or ventilators. I would say that my practice is more than 20 years because I'm just that old.
Well, today's topic is about oral rehab, and I know what it means to an audiologist, but I want to know what it means to a speech pathologist, because I think we have different approaches, they're complementary, and I think audiology should honestly avail itself of speech pathology more often for patients. So from my perspective, when I talk about oral rehab, I am looking to use devices with patients. So I'm thinking along the lines of amplification through a hearing aid or other type of personal sound amplifier. And I'm also coaching patients on kind of advocating for themselves to know when to potentially modify the environment if the noise levels are too high. So it's really more device-centric. So how would you approach oral rehab from SLI perspective?
Yeah, I think that this is one of those areas where really collaboration is best practice for the outcomes of the patient and the patient's family. So much like audiologists, speech pathologists go from a patient or family-centered approach and really do look at how communication is being impacted by hearing. So my understanding of oral rehab from an audiologist perspective is improve hearing to enhance communication, where we're going to look at communication first to enhance what hearing is available to the patient. Much like our colleagues, we are going to do a full assessment to really look at what the needs are of the client and their family, and would then create a plan of care to address the gaps in versus strengths versus challenges.
Okay. When I think about the research, there's a lot of research that says anyone getting amplification does better when they have some form of auditory training. Mm-hmm. But the majority of the time, I feel like we're only utilizing it for patients that might have an implant, like a cochlear implant. Mm-hmm. What is actually done during an oral rehab session?
So based on the outcomes of the assessment, we'll probably approach it from like four different areas. One would be to also assist in sensory management, like the equipment aspect, instruction on what are some of the techniques or strategies that the patient can use. We're actually going to do training where we would practice those strategies to enhance communication. And again, much like our colleagues in audiology, spend a lot of time counseling the patient and the patient's family, that this isn't going to be a quick fix, that this isn't going to be what might be known as normal hearing, but improving the strengths that you have and, again, closing the gaps or the challenges is the goal, the outcome of the sessions.
Mm-hmm. What I find is that a lot of times with audiology, The patient is expecting that the device itself can take over and improve the communication through its processing, its noise reduction, and all of its accessories. But we can't take the patient participation out of the scenario because it is, as its name implies, an aid. It is a tool that will enhance your function, but you still have a lot of cognitive things that need to happen. So the hearing aid lets you detect the sound, but after detection, the brain takes over and identifies and determines if action needs to be taken. And that is the hardest part. So having a coach is honestly one of the best ways to rehabilitate auditorily.
I couldn't agree more. I think that that's a good assessment is going to start and look at the patient's speech, language, and cognitive skills. If there were deficits before the hearing loss, it's certainly not going to get any better with the hearing loss, right? And I think that that might need some coaching aspects. The technology isn't a quick fix. And I think that's when treatment kicks in. Sometimes we do have a very ready, willing, and able client, and it's just 3 or 4 sessions. But then again, we meet patients and their families that need a lot of support, and we might see them for weeks to make sure that they are understanding the limitations of the technology. And I think that's where we kick in with the strategies and the environmental modifications that will help bridge the gaps between what we know works in the technology and what we can quote unquote fix outside of the technology.
And so some of you listening are probably thinking, all right, the hearing aid is there and it's programmed for my level of hearing. So why would I still continue to struggle? There are certain aspects of the hearing loss when you're tested that we're assessing. We're looking at your sensitivity, that you still have hearing that can be stimulated with amplification, but we also have to consider how much speech can you understand in that amplified scenario. So when we're testing you, we are presenting speech materials to you at a level that we know should be able to be heard. And then we're looking at the percentage of that information you can correctly repeat back. For some patients, given what is causing their loss, it may cause distortions because their sensory receptors are damaged and the nerve fibers are not functioning as well as it could be. So the sound that gets up to the brain is not very clear. And so we can tell that by the amount of words you can correctly repeat. For some patients, even at amplified levels, they may hear less than 75%, less than 50%, and for some patients, it can be even less than 10% of the speech information. And so at that point, even if the aids are the top technology and have all of the features correctly engaging in environments, they will have a very limited ability to use the information. And that's when going through oral rehab is almost critical. You can't leave that step out.
And I think that's where I really see the collaboration coming in. So the speech pathologist may come in with training techniques, coach the patient how to modify the environment. I always sort of talk about, like, hey, make sure you don't have competing sound sources like the TV or the radio. How do you access communication with your significant others or communication partners? For example, using contextual clues. I could say to Rebecca here, remember that one time? And she might have no clue what I'm talking about, but my partner will know exactly what I'm saying because we had that experience together. I think there are strategies that we discuss with patients about really building in quality of life. The example I usually give is attending a meal at a restaurant. You're certainly not going to not go out. We know that meals and celebrations are a big part of our culture. So how do you manage attending an event or going to a restaurant in one of those really extraordinarily noisy environments? I think we defer to our audiology specialists and promote hearing protection and avoiding those hazards as part of our counseling. And then finally, and really buttoning it all up, is how do we teach the patient to be a self-advocate? How do we get them to get the things that they need? So for example, they might be in a doctor's office and that for whatever reason, the office door is open and the doctor is providing really critical information, but the noise from the hallway is competing. So the coaching the patients to say like, hey, can you close that door so I can better attend to what you're saying, and making sure I hear and then understand the information you're giving me.
And you could even supplement that by asking for things to be in writing so that you can review them afterwards. Because I believe the statistic says that we only remember about 25% of what is delivered auditorily, and even about half of that is incorrect information when we stop to think about it. So thinking about the restaurant scenario, that's a very popular one for patients with amplification because the background noise, we're trying to have a conversation, but background noise is always something that will interfere. So being able to manage the background noise, but then also think about how you're communicating. We hear this a lot where you just keep repeating the same thing over and over, but it might be the choice of word that you're using is just confusing to the person. So maybe you can rephrase what it is that you're saying. So sometimes the aural rehab is applied to the communication partner, the family member. And we hear this a lot where patients will say, well, I'm trying to watch television, but my wife wants to have a conversation. So my attention is directed to two places. Mm-hmm. And they feel that it's unreasonable in some instances to have to maybe mute the television or pause what they're doing. Because when they were younger, they were able to do both things at the same time. So auditory attention is something that it doesn't stick around. Mm-hmm. It does decline with time.
Yeah, and I love strategies like making sure things are written down and making sure, like, simple things that we take for granted. You know, in my household, when dinner's ready, we just shout at the top of our lungs, come to the table, and our children hear us. But, you know, if you're in a situation where you're communicating, so using those non-verbal communication supplements is going to be really able to fill in the gaps that are being missed. So, for example, you can look at the face and really be able to tell, like, oh, the person's speaking about something very serious because they have, like, their eyes are turned down or their lips are a little bit more pursed. So you get those contextual cues while you're filling in the missing sound gaps in the words that are being, I guess, transponded through your hearing aid.
And we also always advocate for face-to-face communication, even with amplification in place. A lot of times the expectation is that the microphone sensitivity will allow you to communicate at a fair distance. Most devices will have a maximum amplification range of about 8 to 10 feet, so more for a conversational, almost like a dinner table length. If the person communicating to you is further than that, you may notice that there's a sound, but it won't have the clarity or information until that person comes closer to you. And then you could use some visual cues to fill in for any information that you're not hearing. Hearing aids do not restore all aspects of hearing. They will make some sounds louder as long as you have hearing that can accept it. So for more severe losses, we may not have enough residual hearing to function that could be benefited from a hearing aid. So you may not have access to all of the information, and therefore getting as close as possible for the visual supplementation is critical.
And I think that's why we try to pull in families too, because we don't want the burden to be completely on the patient to be constantly saying, you need to look at me, we need to be in the same room, turn your radio down. I think that must be exhausting for our patients. So if we can get the families on board, caregivers and other practitioners that are in the world of a person that has hearing impairment, I think we have a really successful, we have an opportunity to be really successful in managing the hearing loss while maintaining a really positive quality of life.
And one thing that I've noticed over the years is that manufacturers of hearing aids will include some aural rehab coaching in the manufacturer's guidebook for the products. I've seen where they talk about learn to use your devices primarily in a quiet environment and so that you can begin to acclimate to what's around you. Majority of the time what we're listening to is actually a noise. And so the first step is to just get your brain used to being stimulated, hearing the sounds, and practice identifying. One of my colleagues, Dr. Burdett, likes to say triangulate. If you hear a sound you're not familiar with, stop and listen and determine, is it something that you recognize? And if not, try to figure out where it's located and maybe move closer to that sound and consider that it could be, you know, the air conditioner that you haven't heard for a while or the microwave when it's cooking. I've had family members with hearing aids as new users that didn't realize the microwave made a noise when it cooked because the light came on and the tray started turning, and that's what they assumed was the cooking process. But it makes a noise. And so getting used to and just being open to that type of practice, I find a lot of people, it's a different experience, but it shouldn't be immediately assumed to be a negative experience. It's just a difference, and it's a training process to get the best benefit out of hearing aids and the communication enhancement. So if you go into it with an open mind and are willing to practice, you could even try reading out loud to yourself just so that you can get used to the way voices will sound coming through your new devices. That is a very basic form of aural rehab that you can do on your own at home. Would you have any other suggestions for basic aural rehab?
Yeah, I think we in therapy look at the type of client before we sort of decide which approach we're going to take. My research tells me there's two basic approaches to what we'll call auditory training, or as you said, sort of like getting used to the device and using it successfully. We could take a bottom-up approach, which really is looking at finite units of communication and then building upon them. So for example, starting at discriminating words and then building into shorter sentences, into longer conversations. So really starting with the smallest unit of communication and building up. Or we could take more of a top-down processing, which is an approach that looks at the overall meaning of the communication and helps the communication partners sort of fill in the gaps with those contextual cues. An example I usually give to describe the difference is in the world of sign language, we could use finger spelling, which is word for word interpretation of the words that you want to say spelled out with the finger alphabet versus American Sign Language, which uses gestures to broadly describe concepts. So thinking about how you want to approach training, again, depends on the goals of the client and their family and really what we think is going to be the biggest bang for the buck. We also use that training aspect to begin to practice what the communicator needs in order to understand the information and then respond to it. The old term was called lip reading. Now we call it speech reading because, again, we don't just focus on what the mouth is doing in order to interpret what is being said. There's lots of information. And who better than our population these days to know, being post-pandemic, the masks are coming off. We now see full faces and we're understanding communication differently these days than really just looking at what we used to call smile eyes, mm-hmm. because that's the part of the face we healthcare providers and just people in general were really focused on through that pandemic.
Well, that's all very great advice for our listeners. And so if you would like to have an appointment with myself, I can be reached at the Pennsylvania Ear Institute at 215-780-3180. And how can patients obtain speech pathology services?
Sure. So co-located in the same building as the Pennsylvania Ear Institute is the Speech Language Institute. We serve the lifespan for assessment and intervention, both at individual and groups. So please reach out to the Speech Language Institute at 215-780-3150.
Thank you for listening. Tune in next time.
Thank you.